Good morning, good morning, good morning, and welcome to our weekly Sunrise Project Support Group call. I'm so delighted you're here as always in this safe space that's filled with love and compassion and our mutual desire to heal our families and, most importantly, ourselves. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And all of you that are here every week know that I say that and wear that around my neck every day. I'm so delighted to have with us this morning Dr. Raquel Martin. She is calling in from her parents' home in Delaware. She has on one of my favorite songs in the world. We were talking about Fight the Power, the 2020 remake version. She got some Public Enemy shirt. I love it. I love it. I love it. But Dr. Raquel Martin, let me tell you about who she is if you don't know who she is already. She is a licensed clinical psychologist. She's a professor at Tennessee State University in Nashville. She's a scientist, a podcast host. She's a mother. She's a partner. She's an incredible friend. And she is on a mission to radically imagine Black possibility. I want to hear all about that in a moment. She promotes Black mental health as a key to legacy building and longevity. As a professor and scientist at Tennessee State, she teaches numerous courses, including psychology of the Black experience and hip hop activism and mental health, which sounds so beyond fascinating. Dr. Martin's research and publications focus on Black identity development as a bridge to esteem development and a shield against mental health difficulties. Let me let a couple people in. Okay, there they are. Awesome. Additionally, she has a private practice, Martin Psychological Services, which focuses on Black mental health. She's a seasoned professional speaker. She's presented at esteemed events like South by Southwest and TEDx. And she also hosts an incredible podcast called Mind Your Mental, Mind Your Mental, which centers on the Black experience and fosters a really lively and healthy dialogue on well-being and also humanizing the Black community. I do recommend the podcast. It is fantastic, and it's everywhere you find your podcast. It's called Love Mind Your Mental. Her work has been featured in Forbes, Essence, BuzzFeed, and USA Today, and many, many, many other places. She's a content creator with over 1 million followers across all of her social platforms. She regularly talks about Crown and the Crown movement and has been a guest here with Sunrise before. And she is so incredible. She's just an awesome role model and friend, and I'm so delighted to have you here with us this morning. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Happy to have you here, and thank you for doing this in your parents' home. We were just
Oh,
talking about
of
how you were supposed to be in the hotel. Share the story because it was really funny this morning.
one of my very best friends has baby shower, and we're known each other since we were young, so we know each other from Philly. And I had a hotel reservation, and I went to check in because I love my parents, but I have two boys and a husband. So if I get a chance to sleep unencumbered at a hotel, I'm sleeping at a
Yes,
hotel.
and it's a delight.
It's a delight, right? It's like, oh, I think I'm just going to, turn the air up as high as I want it, eat my food hot, and just listen to explicit hip hop in the morning, because I can't do any of those things at home with my two boys. Like, we're all listening to, I love me some Veggie Dance, but I also want to listen to NWA some mornings. You know what I'm saying? So
Exactly.
I went to check in, and it was taking a while, and I was like, is everything okay? And they were like, yes. So we apologized for the confusion, but we don't have any rooms. And I said, I paid for my room. And they were like, yes, apparently we overbooked. And I said, okay, so what's the next step? And they're like, oh, well, we're calling hotels. It should just be a couple of minutes. And the woman behind me stood up, and she was just like, oh, have you guys found me a room yet? She apparently They gave her a key to a room. She went into the room. There was a family in it already. And I asked her, I was like, ma'am, how long have you been waiting? And she said, 2 hours. So I asked the gentleman, I said, why would you tell me it would take a couple of minutes if she's been waiting 2 hours? And he said, well, yes, it's not going to be a couple of minutes. I called my mom. I said, come get me. I'm not, because he said, oh, we'll refund your money. And I said, I don't need a refund. I need somewhere. I said, yes, you will, but I also need somewhere to sleep. Luckily, you know, my family, I was in Philly. They were only an hour away from Philly. But that woman, she was just like, I've been waiting here for hours and I have nowhere to sleep. I'm just like, this is, I've never heard of a hotel doing that. Like, I've heard of airlines, never heard of a hotel doing that. So I was just
Wow.
like, you know, refund. It's kind of like when you get your food and it's just like, I'm a big sauce person. So when they deliver my food and they're like, oh, we'll refund you for the sauce. And I'm like, well, don't refund. I want my sauce.
I
I'm not
want
going
the
to eat this
sauce.
now. I want the sauce.
That's not gonna work. So that's actually one of the big, that's our topic for today is how do we get through disagreements? And you had a disagreement that you moved through with grace and with positive energy. And I'd love to talk about that because throughout that whole disagreement or that situation, you stayed calm, you stayed peaceful. And is that your norm? Because that's that I do want to talk about that today. We're talking about how do you have a disagreement with your child or your young adult? Many of us have young adults. How do
Yeah,
you do that?
is it my norm? I would say, like, so if it's with like general people, I would like not someone that I'm close with or anything like that. Honestly, it's the same thing. It is now. I am from Philly, so I'm a very North Philly person. So it took a while for me to, I don't know, I would say chill out a little bit. I think I'm good at, I always say I'm good at knowing whether I'm talking to a sponge or a brick, right? Like if someone's going to be receptive to what I'm saying or if they're not. And in being a mom, as you know, I'm often exhausted. So I'm big on like, I'm not about to go back and forth with someone who's not going to listen to me, or who's not here to listen to me, or they have no power to change the situation. Because I'm constantly tired, you know? So it's
Yeah,
just
yes, I do. Very
like
much so.
so, and it takes so much energy to do that. So as soon as he told me, like, in this scenario, like, yeah, we have no rooms and we also are having difficulty finding it. You know, I called the ultimate problem. I just called my mom and told her to come get me because that's the ultimate problem solver for me. But most of the time, as long as I feel as though like I'm being heard, I don't have any issue being like calm or talking about it. But it depends on like if I'm being disparaged or invalidated. That gets, I mean, that definitely gets up under my skin. But even with that, as someone who like went through a PhD program, like training and all that, where there's very rarely people who look like me, and I consistently had to advocate for the Black experience. I'm very good at doing that without having to like raise my voice or be disrespectful. Even though no matter what, like if they want to perceive me as aggressive, they're going to perceive me as aggressive. My husband says that I have this tone. He's like, you don't even have to raise your voice, but he's like, you have this tone that is just like, you don't have to raise your voice. I think it's understood that like solve the problem or else. So I don't have to raise my
Yes,
voice, you
you
know,
don't have
like
to raise your voice. I've seen that. I've seen some of your responses to situations where you're like, ma'am, let me just say something right here. It's
let
not
me
okay.
just clear the room because we appear to have a confusion and I want to clarify it for you just to help you out. You know, you've lost your mind and I'm not here to help you find it. Okay. Now, you know, but with parenting, I feel like it's you, disagreeing with children. I think it's so many different levels because it's like it's one with the children, but it's also like with my husband, we don't agree on everything when it comes down to different things. So like having to manage that in front of them. To this day, like one of the biggest things parenting, I have two boys and they love to, you know, they watch me cook, they watch my husband cook. And one of the biggest disagreements me and my husband had was like he did not want my son to have a kitchen set. And it's like, how do you know, you're still a unit and you want to have a unified front in front of your children, even when you don't agree with your husband. Like it was just very, it's just like, all right, well, we'll talk about this later. We're gonna figure out what the deal is, but it's hard to keep a unified front, even especially when you don't agree with the parent, you know, your partner.
Right. So what did you do in that situation?
Oh, we didn't get a kitchen set. However, we did get what did I get him? Pots and pans and cooking food and plates and cups and like a little thing. So I didn't get a big kitchen set, but I got every single appliance that goes with a kitchen set. And technically that wasn't a kitchen set. So yeah.
Okay, no. So you work it out, like you figure
We
out
work it out. It's
the
like some stuff, you know, and some stuff is just like embedded in people. And it's just like, yeah, this is kind of unreasonable. Because honestly, my sons saw my husband cook more than he saw me cook. They saw me cook, especially when I was healing. But some stuff you just know is just embedded in people. And I'm just like, I'm not, you know, you're not my patient. You're my husband. And I'm not in the mood for this. So like, I'm not really going to try to like take the time to upend things when I know that like you're just holding on to stuff that's been around for a minute, especially since my son helps us cook Some stuff is just like, I don't even think you realize that you don't believe in this, right? Like, I've had conversations with men, specifically Black men, who are like, oh, they're not feminists, as it were. And I'll be like, okay, I know you have a son and a daughter. Yes. Do you feel like if your son can be a basketball player, your daughter can be a basketball player? And they're like, yes, of course. And I'm like, you do realize that's feminism, right? Like, you realize that, right? No, that's not what I'm saying. And I'm like, yeah, some stuff is just ingrained, even though it's just like everything you do supports feminism. And yet, let me say the word and you just lost your mind.
It's just that. Nope. It's just a
So
no.
it's just like I got used to just being like, yeah, all right, well, this is, I don't know, let's just, be respectful in front of the boys and stuff like that. But he still helps us cook and stuff like that. Certain things are just ingrained. And I'm like, I've been married to you for, geez, we've been married 7 years together for 14. And some stuff I'm just like, yeah, I
It's
don't have
not
the
a big
energy.
deal, right?
It's not a big deal. And I feel like it's the same with children. I think the biggest thing is that's difficult is parenting as like parenting Black children, parenting while Black. It's also the aspect of we have an added layer because it's not only about like the typical stuff of making sure you eat your vegetables and you do your homework. There's also like parenting out of racism related stress. So we have that added layer that adds to that fear, which makes it more difficult for us to just like, oh, well, we'll see how it happens. We'll hope we'll see. We'll let you make the mistakes on your own because it's more dangerous for some of the scenarios. So I think that that's what gets in the way of it being easier to have disagreements with your children because we also have to deal with parenting Black children, and that's more difficult. It's not as simple as like, oh, it's a little mistake and everything will be okay. It might not be okay just because of the way our children are looked at. So I think that's an added layer that like I think children don't get. They won't until they're older, but I think that's what makes it more difficult to have disagreements with your children without being like, listen, this is like more serious than you think. Like, I know we said like be home at a certain time and curfew, and you think it's just about me being strict, but like the neighborhood we live in, or there's more police out, and you're a Black boy or a Black girl. Like, it's not just about the curfew, it's about your life. And I think that's a big stressor that, Black parents don't often get to acknowledge as much. And it makes it more stressful because kids will be kids and they'll just be like, dum 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 dum, like, and we're all like, listen, this is more serious than you think. This isn't just me being a mom. This is me being a Black person in America and a Black body. And I think you need to understand this as well.
And especially with boys. I mean, it's all Black people, but with Black boys, and they are tall and big and seen as, violent or a criminal or, a menace. It's just really, it's easy to become afraid and to let your afraid and to let your fear take over your faith. And that's been the transition, I think, for many of us, is really shifting to faith over fear. It's really a big, big challenge. Especially as your boys are teenagers or they're young adults and you have boundaries. You talked about this actually on your recent one of your recent podcasts. You talked about the importance of setting boundaries and respecting boundaries. So what do you do when sometimes you have boundaries in your home and you say, okay, we're not smoking weed in the house. That could be an example. Not no weed in the house, but then you smell it or you wake up, you're like, okay, what do you do in those situations?
So in that scenario, you're setting a boundary and a rule, right? Because boundaries guide your behavior and rules attempt to guide someone else's. So if say like a scenario I often give is like if your boundary is your if the rule is like you're not going to raise your voice, someone's not going to raise their voice in the house, and a boundary is like I'm not going to stay somewhere I feel unsafe. Somebody can break that rule. They can start like screaming and behaving violently in a house, but your boundary can still stay firm, where it's just like I'm not going to stay in places where I feel uncomfortable, so I'm going to control my body and leave, right? And it's important to know the difference because somebody can break a rule, but your boundary will still stay firm. And it's still necessary to have boundaries and rules. Because at the end of the day, if the rule is the fact that like you're not smoking in the house, the rule is the fact that you're not smoking in the house. And it's important to realize that even in this aspect of like listening to your children and building relationships with your children, you're still deserving of the same respect that you give them. Right. Like if their rule is, I don't know, if children have rules like, oh, mom, please knock before you come in the house and come in my room, right? Like privacy and stuff like that. And you're respecting that rule, they should be respecting your rules as well. Right. So I don't want anyone to think that this whole aspect of like active listening and, having boundaries means your children get to like walk all over you. No, it's like, well, I'm giving you the same energy that I want to be received. I'm respecting the rules that you have, and I'm understanding that you're a growing person and you're going to have autonomy. And there's going to be consequences when it comes to me breaking your rules, right? Like if you keep coming in the room without knocking or and stuff like that, the consequence is likely that your children will lose trust. They'll be frustrated with you, and those are understandable consequences, right? So if they're breaking your rules, it's going to be the same thing. Right? Like, mm-hmm. I asked you not to do this and you still did it. So now trust has been severed. We have to talk about ways to rebuild it, and you have to deal with that consequence. So I think that's understandable. I think one of the things that happens is that the rules just become, I mean, I don't get to decide what the rules are in your home. But I think a stressor is when rules are placed on children and they don't know the root of it. And I totally get, as someone who, you know, I am in my mother's home right now, that like, no, you don't have to explain anything to us. Like, but I can say that it helps to build and foster the relationship with that we have when we don't feel as though we're adhering to ambiguous rules, right? Like it's not, it's like, no, you don't have to explain anything to me, and you don't have to explain anything to anyone. But if you can think to yourself in these scenarios where someone says, this is the rule because you feel more included in the scenario, this also opens more room for critical thinking. Now, the not smoking weed in the house, that's gonna be affirmed now. Now, like, that's, it's just like, you're not smoking weed in the house because I don't want anyone smoking weed in the house, and I don't want you smoking weed at all. But like, this isn't a conversation. But like, say the rule is, you know, your curfew is like 10 p.m. And it's like, your curfew is at 10 p.m. is because like, we're going to sleep early, or, you know, there's a big event and we want to make sure you're safe at home and stuff like that. And it's just like, okay, well, I can understand coming home at 10 p.m. Also, you know, the event is longer than 10. I really want to stay out for the event. My best friend, who, you know, their mom, you know, their mom's home, who lived closer to the event, they said that I could spend the night. So instead of me coming home at 10, can I go to their house and you can call their mom, call their dad, we'll get there at the exact time so I can stay a little bit later. You know, like, by knowing the reason that they want you to come home earlier, by knowing the reason that the curfew is at like 10 o'clock that night, you can also help your children. Like, they can critically think and come up with a scenario, but that'll never happen if it's just like, the conversation is done, sit down, you got to be home at 10. Because yeah, there's reasons like, oh, I want you home safer because I know the event ends later, but I'm not staying up all night and I don't want you out that late. And I'm worried about safety. And what if they have a friend that lives close by and you know the parents? Because I grew up in a house where it's not enough for me to know their names. I need to know their names and their phone number. And I need to have set eyes on your parents. Like, you know, I know their name. I've never met them. You're not going over there. Mm-mm. Absolutely not. So like, I think it also fosters the opportunity for critical thinking, but I also think it provides the opportunity for you to, I don't know, your children to build their skills with problem solving. Because I always state, like, when we shut stuff down, we shut down the opportunities to have conversations and the opportunity for your children to learn how to problem solve or to have respectful conversations. And if they can't do that with their parents, like the most salient relationship that they have, if they can't do it with the people who they feel most comfortable with or who they should feel most comfortable with, they're not going to be able to do it out in the world where they might be taken advantage of by their coworker or their boss or romantic relationships. Like, we really are the building blocks. They build their building blocks for all other communication skills, the majority of them with us. So if you can't problem solve with me, it's going to be less likely that you can problem solve at work. If you can't advocate for yourself when you're feeling disrespected or not heard with me, you're not going to be able to do that in your romantic relationships or your friendships. Like, I feel like I'm setting if my children can go toe to toe with me, their most salient relationship in a respectful way, and they can learn that, you know, disagreement does not beget degradation, then it'll be easier for them to recognize it in other people. Like, oh, I'm disagreeing with you, and that's why I'm screaming at you. Well, no, I've had disagreements with my parents my whole life, and they've never called me out my name. So you can't sit here and tell me that disagreements mean that you have to call me out my name. Oh, well, I'm mad at you, and I did what I wanted to do, and that's why I put my hands on you. No, because my parents have been disappointed in me at times or upset at me at times for my actions, and they have never put their hands on me. So you're not going to tell me that's an appropriate way to behave in this way. Like, we're giving the building blocks for them. We're normalizing experiences. And if the experiences we give them are shutting them down, not listening, not letting them talk, not letting them problem solve, screaming at them, putting our hands on them, that's what they're going to think is normal. And then when they get into these unhealthy relationships and y'all recognize it's unhealthy, you're gonna be like, why the heck do they think it's okay for his girlfriend to talk? Why does she think it's okay to talk to him like that? Why doesn't he notice it? Maybe that's how he's always been talked to and he hasn't seen anything different.
I'm sitting here nodding and saying yes to everything you're saying, because the relationship with your children, if we don't have a relationship with our children and we focus on being right all the time, then that's the the core, that's the fundamentals, the relationship
Mm-hmm.
versus being right. And you said so many things about the importance of that relationship and having a safe space for our children to come talk to us. And I think many of us that are struggled, you know, up until now, in the past, I've struggled with really not trying to dictate my children's decisions or try to tell them, oh no, you need to go here, not there, school-wise.
Yeah.
And even now, like looking at some choices that are
Yeah.
made, it's
That's what
hard.
the basketball players did.
Okay, somebody is on, not on mute, but did you want to say something or ask a question? It says Zoom user. Oh no, they went on mute. Okay. But I was, you know, my point is about the relationship and how critically important that is. And what do you do to try to get back the relationship if it has been severed? If you've been the parent and the teenager is like, I want to go to such and such party. And the
Yeah.
parent said, nope, you're not going to the party. No, right, no reason. Just no, you're not doing parties. How do you try to rebuild the relationship if there may not have ever really been one?
I think one of the most important thing is to be honest with your children about the fact that you're trying to rebuild the relationship so that they know that you're trying. I think sometimes it's this whole aspect of like, oh, they know I'm trying, and it's just like, well, there's nothing wrong with telling them to clarify that. Because when you tell someone that you're trying and you're making an effort, you're letting them know that you care about this relationship, right? And I think the most important aspect is focusing on, I know it's like the buzzword of the century, but creating a safe space. But when I say safe space, I don't mean like the house, of course, should be a safe environment, but I mean like you should be the safe space for your children. And in doing that, you're able to build an opportunity for them to always have someone to go to. And it doesn't mean that like you're going to agree with everything, because one of the aspects of building a safe space is validating your children. And validation does not mean agreeing with them. It doesn't mean providing them with solutions. It means listening. It means being supportive. It can happen through active listening and reflecting back. It means withholding judgment. And you can provide options for your children. Like you can provide conversations and be like, okay, so here's, do you want support or solutions? Or one of the things I always ask, especially with the older kiddos, and if they're like, they want a little bit of both, it's like, well, here are some scenarios that may play out in this. Here are some things that may be helpful for you, but I'm also understanding that you're old enough to figure out what you're going to do with this, right? But I would be remiss if I didn't say that like this might this these may be some perspectives you haven't thought about. Now, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I'm going to provide you with some additional perspective, because you may not have that. You don't have the breadth of the experiences that your parents have, so like I'm providing you with some perspective. But if I'm sharing the fact that like I'm working on building, rebuilding a relationship, I'm going to apologize for what severed the relationship in the first place. And I think especially as a Black kid and like all my friends, and we're all parents now, and we're talking about the way we were parented, all of us can resonate with the fact that like when we were growing up, we didn't really get apologies. Sometimes we didn't get people actually, parents actually saying, I'm sorry. We got, oh, you could still go to that friend's sleepover if you want to, or oh, like I got you something from the store, or oh, did you want to go get something to eat with me? And just the fact that you like, yes, I want that positive thing. But I would have loved it if you stated that, like, I'm apologizing for the way that I acted. I'm gonna work on it going forward. Everybody makes a mistake, normalizing the fact that parents make mistakes too. Because one of the big, most frustrating things I think can be for children is like not acknowledging that like we're all growing, we're parents, but we, it's the first time I've met my son, even though I created him, this is the first time I've been a parent, or and
That's
I,
right.
my children are 5 and 2. I'm a baby parent, in my opinion. But I've been working in child, family, and adult therapy. Oh my goodness, I think I've had hundreds of patients at this point. So like I'm incorporating, like, yes, as a parent, one of the most important things I can acknowledge is that I don't know everything and that I'm working through it. But by
Right.
doing that, I'm also normalizing apologies for my children so that they can know when someone cares for you or respects you and they make a mistake. One, it's okay to make mistakes. Two, it's you apologize for those mistakes. And three, the best apology is changed behavior. Right. So if
That's
I knew
right.
that like something was happening and with my children, I would apologize. Even I've had to do this before. Like I raised my voice at my son, and he said, "We don't scream, mama." And I was just like, "You are absolutely right." Because I asked you not to raise your voice, and mama raised her voice. I'm sorry. I was just very frustrated, but that's not an excuse. Going forward, if mama says she needs a minute, she needs a minute. I need you to respect that. And I'm going to work on not raising my voice at you. Because in
That's
that
so
particular,
fantastic.
yeah, in that particular scenario, I was also like, hey, I tried to use all the tools afforded to me. I'm like, you guys have been calling me, so I just need a minute. I just need a minute. And they were like, he was still just like, but I want that. And I'm just like, wait, wait. So I was trying to use my tool. I was trying to, I said, I need a minute. And as I was walking to get my minute, he just does this thing where he'll be like, and I'm just like, wait. And I was like, oh, gosh, now I
right,
apologize.
like, he's just a baby. He's like,
I
but I
know,
need
I was
mom
like,
right
I was
now.
trying. I was trying. And then after I did it, he said, we don't scream, mama. And
I love that.
I was
Oh
like,
my
darn it, now
God.
I have to apologize. I was like, I should have ran to my safe space because I would have never messed up. So I was like, I'm sorry. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Oh,
In my
gosh.
mind, I was like, I told you I had reached my limit and I just need to breathe outside for a second. But you keep asking me about this, the 50th fruit snack you done had, you know, that I was like, yeah, you're right. I shouldn't have raised my voice. And I always say grown-ups make mistakes too.
Grown-ups
So
make
I am
mistakes too.
sorry.
I
I
love
don't
that.
raise my voice. And I was like, I try to give it a moment for him to teach me. And I'm like, what should mama have done instead? He said, you should have taken a breath and slowed down. And
And
I'm
this is
like,
your 5-year-old? He's
this is my
five.
5-year-old. I mean, mind you, I walk him through the same thing. He still don't do it, but he could tell me that that's what I should do. Whatever.
But the fact
But
that he can tell you that, that's
he
amazing.
can
And
tell
he can
me,
talk.
but it's because when he does that, when he screams at me or his, at his, not even scream, like raises his voice at his brother, because he does it a lot. They're going toe to toe a lot lately. I'm just like, okay, you know, we don't need to scream at your brother because now he's crying and like, you know. So I was like, what should you have done instead? He's like, take a breath. He apologizes to him. But we really normalized apologies to the point where it's just like, if he's like, no, that's not what we do, he expects an apology. Like, I'll wait, mom. You're not about to, you know, you said that you were going to do this in 10 minutes. It's been an hour. My bad. I fell asleep. I thought I was blinking, but I was sleeping because I'm so tired. But I want him to have that because we're just modeling experiences. So rebuilding
Yes.
that relationship with your children, state that I'm sorry.
I love
Let
that.
them know where you're coming from. And I think there's a difference between excuses and explanations. It's not an excuse to say, I'm sorry. I really got upset in this scenario because I have a consistent fear of like something happening to you at night. You broke your curfew. I had a fear, and you weren't answering your phone. That's an explanation for your behavior. And in doing that, I just that overruled my whole aspect of like treating you with respect. And I'm sorry for that. You know, that's an explanation for the behavior. It's like going forward, you know, you guys problem solve, like, how are we going to handle this in the future? And going forward, you know, I'm apologizing for my behavior. You may apologize for yours. You're still going to have a consequence because you still broke the rule. However, I can provide you with consequences without disrespecting you. Because me apologizing to you doesn't mean that you're not, you know, I don't know if the whatever the punishment is. It doesn't mean you all punishment, honey. You still broke a rule. You understand what I'm saying? It just means that, like, in delving out your punishment or your, not punishment, and delving out your consequence, because punishments are punitive. A consequence can be like, okay, well, you know, you came in late and we had an agreement built out of respect and you broke that trust. So like, there's going to take some time for you to build that trust back. So yes, you can still go out, but your curfew is now 9 p.m. for until you can come home at 9 p.m. for a reasonable amount of time, maybe a week. Then you've earned the right, you built that trust back so that you can go back out at 10 p.m. But me apologizing to you is not me saying that what you did wasn't wrong. It's stating what you did was wrong and what I did was wrong as well. But you're still going to have that consequence for your actions, period. Because nobody walks around this world without having consequences for their actions, you know? But I can do that in telling you that in a calm voice. I don't have to scream at you. I don't have to disparage you. I don't have to compare you to your siblings. You always do this. You never do. Like, I don't have to do that. I can just point blank say, like, all right, I'm glad you came home safe. Just a heads up, like, this was past the curfew, so you do realize the consequences. In order for you to rebuild that trust, your curfew is now 9 p.m. and when you can consistently come home at that time, then we can talk about when you go back at another time. And let them know that you're working on it. Acknowledge the fact that you're human, you know, like, yeah, you know, I'm sorry, I make mistakes. I don't see any weakness in stating that I make mistakes. I don't think that means that my children are walking all over me. I think that I want to humanize myself in front of my children so that it normalizes them making mistakes. Because some of the scariest things that I've heard patients say, I'll never forget, I had one patient state that, like, I would rather like be picked up by police than call my parents and tell them I was somewhere I said I wasn't going to be. That's dangerous. Like, you're so
That
afraid
is
of your
very,
parents. And
yeah.
there's a difference between fear and respect, y'all. You're so afraid of your parents that you're willing to deal with the carceral system, then call your mom and dad and say, I know y'all think I'm upstairs. I am not. I need to get picked up, you know, like, or even like, oh, I'm at a party and I told my mom I wasn't going to go to the party, but now there's this boy here and he's making me feel really uncomfortable, but I'm too scared to call my parents. That's scary. I'm with my friends and I know I'm with that friend that I told my parents I wouldn't hang out with, but now they're doing something kind of scary. And like they have weapons, but I don't have anyone to call because I'm too scared to tell my parents that I'm with the people that I said I wasn't going to be with. So now they're doing some dangerous stuff because they're too afraid. They know they have the mindset to know, like, this is probably what my parents was talking about. But now they have no exit strategy,
Right.
and they're
Safe
likely going to
word.
still
Sometimes
go
you just
through
need
with
the
it.
word. You need a word. Our word was pound, it's pound cake with Chris. It's like call at any time if you need some pound cake. Just say, hey mom, can you make a pound cake? And I'll be there. No questions asked. But
No
that's
questions
with the
asked.
second child, the first child, totally different. Totally different. Probably
You
wouldn't have
know,
called.
but it's like, okay, no question. Like, I ain't gonna ask no questions now. I'm gonna pick you up. We gonna get home. We gonna talk about this tomorrow. But right now, I'm gonna just be happy you safe,
That's right.
and you use the word.
That's right.
And when I've calmed down, and you like, you know, and you realize you're safe, we'll have a conversation
We'll
about it.
have a
Like, yeah, I can respect
conversation.
it enough to be like, all right, okay,
Yeah,
all right, okay.
you are so blessed that you know these things when your children are little, I think. And the reason we're here with so many of us on this call is that we didn't have those tools, and didn't know to communicate and to apologize and to calm down and walk away and listen and validate and all the amazing things that you've said, making sure that they feel seen and heard and loved and respected, in their own human way. Like, no, many of us, did something very different with our first, especially. And so pulling that back. Sometimes we have a second chance, which is awesome. Sometimes we have to work through it to rebuild those relationships. And
But I
from
think
loving
it's
everything you're saying. Now go ahead.
also some people haven't had the opportunity to walk away, right? Like, I'm also very well aware that, like,
Yes.
I'm married and my
That's
husband's
right.
family is there, but a lot of people haven't had that opportunity to walk away. Like, it's dealing with parenting 24/7, lack of resources,
Yes.
having to also work at a job. You know, you're getting disrespected at work and you're not getting appreciated at work. And then you come home and then your children, who are acting in a developmentally appropriate way, like, just do something and you're just like, that, you know, I'm disrespected out at work. I'm disrespected in this world. I'll be darned if I'm going to be disrespected in this house too by my kids. And you snap. Like, that's also like very understandable. But I think one of the biggest things is like, we have to regulate ourselves before we co-regulate our children. Like, our
That's
children
right.
don't have the ability to regulate themselves. Like, we're gifting that to them. Like, I have to take a breath so that I can walk you through this tantrum. Because at the end of the day, tantrums and screaming and going back and forth and stuff like that's annoying. Like, have the fact that I'm over here going toe to toe with someone who I still have to remind to brush their teeth is absurd. You know, and I can get that as a parent. It's just like, are you serious? Like, I asked you. Somebody asked you for your social security number and you gave them their Instagram because you thought that was your social. And you want to tell me you know more than me? Like, it's unreasonable. I get it, you know? Because it's just like, what? Like, okay, you know more than me. Tell me again what a PCP is. Okay. All right. You know, like, have some sense. And I get that it's frustrating. But I think the biggest thing is slowing down. I think we also didn't have realistic expectations because a lot of times parents will come to me and they'll be like, well, when I was that age, you know, it was understood that you didn't share your opinion. And it was also understood that, like, you know, I should be able to sit down quietly and all this other stuff. And I was like, yes. And that's the way you were reared. And I think you're a fantastic person. I can also state the fact that, like, that was inappropriate because children are supposed to ask questions. And as someone who's like doing family therapy, it's just like, it's also like you're saying this is the way you're brought up as an adult. As an adult, it's hard for you to advocate for yourself.
Right.
As an adult, you mentioned the fact that you're a people pleaser. As an adult, you mentioned the fact that you put people's needs before your own. And a lot of that is because your needs, you were never allowed to voice them. You're never allowed to advocate for yourself. You mentioned like, oh, you know, this is the way I was brought up. When's the last time you talked to your parent? Like, when serious things happen, you're an adult. When serious things happen, you don't like talking to your parent because you think they're going to be judgmental. Is that what you want your kids to have when they get older? You know, like it's like you can acknowledge the way that you were brought up. You can also acknowledge the fact that your parents did the best of what they had and
That's
state that they
right.
should have had more.
That's
Like I
right.
can acknowledge like, oh yeah, my mom did the best of what she had, but she also didn't have enough. You
That's
know,
right.
and that came out. So I think it's okay to realize that it's like, you know, it's hard ego-wise to just be like, you know, I'm over here having a conversation with a 13-year-old and it's like, I know, it's crazy, but this will also provide the opportunity for them to have conversations in the future.
That's
And
right.
also have a relationship with them in the future, because one of the biggest complaints I'm hearing from families now is that like kids are getting older, they move out and they're going no contact with their parents. Like
Oh,
they're
wow.
once they've
None.
gotten to a point, yeah, it's happening a lot. It's happening a lot. And it's just like, and when kids explain, like, yes, when it was a, you know, when it was a scenario where I had no choice but to engage with you and stuff like that, I did. But when it's a choice, you know, because as children get, people get older, they have a choice. It's like, would I choose to consistently engage with you when you've been judgmental, stated that you don't care, like talk over me? I'm choosing not to. And a lot of children are just being like, I've tried. And yeah, once I moved out, I decided to go no contact because like I've tried multiple times and you seem like you don't care and you're stating it's gonna be my way or the highway. I chose the highway.
Yeah, which makes sense logically. But the parents like,
Logically.
wait, I don't understand. I don't understand what happened. But
I
that
don't know
makes
what
sense.
happened.
They run the other way.
They run the other way. So I
They
always tell
do.
parents, like, avoid dismissing things. Don't trivialize feelings or decisions because we've all been there. Recognize their feelings. Like, if it's something like, oh, you know, I can see you're passionate about this. I can see that this is something you feel strongly about. Trust them, like, or express trust, because I think sometimes things aren't really stated. Like, I believe in your ability to make decisions. I want to encourage independence, but you can also offer guidance. Like, I want to offer you some insights. I'm not insisting that you follow my path, but I just want to give you some information from what I have seen. And you can also even ask them some open-ended questions, not in the point of like, so you thought this was a this made sense, or what did you think was going to happen? You can just be like, well, what was your thought process when it came to like making this decision? Like, you can do that. And you're, of course, your heart is going to get stuck in your chest, and it's a very fearful experience, in the first place. But at the end of the day, you have to trust the fact that you've instilled values in them, because they're gonna leave anyway. You have to foster autonomy in them, whether they're older or younger. Like when they're younger, luckily the stakes aren't as high. Like, you know, I can hand my son something, and I'm like, use both hands. He doesn't use both hands, drops it, and I'm like, well, that was the last one. That was the last one, honey. So I can make you something else, but like. That's why I'm saying use both hands, you know, and that, you know, and he could have used one hand and he made it okay, great. But like that's also that never happens. Like after I tell him like, oh, you know, it might make a it, th this is kind of heavy, so you might need to use both hands. I got it, mama. Cool. It's always the last one too. Like that was the last slice of pizza, bro. You want a PB&J? Because I this is these that's just a natural consequence, you know, or oh, you know, if you stand on that, like that seems unsafe, you might fall off. He falls off, but for some reason he thinks it's funny and he doesn't hurt himself. And I'm like, all right, no. Okay, whatever. Just don't hurt yourself. Watch out for your brother. Watch your head or something. I don't know.
Right. Which
It's also like, I also have to just be like, I mean, he's
they have to
quiet.
learn somehow too. And like you said, the consequences are not so high. And
The
sometimes
consequences are not so high when they
yeah.
get
And for
older.
teens, we're trying to keep them out of the system, out of getting picked up, out of juvie, all the things. We're trying to just keep them safe, and alive. It's sometimes.
Yeah, and giving them, and I think providing them with the perspective is helpful in there. Just be like, listen, I'm not over here trying to tell you what to do. There are some scenarios where it's just gonna be point blank period, like I'm telling you, like this is a terrible idea or whatever, and I want you to trust me in that sense. But in doing that, you know, a lot of times I find that children shut stuff down if you don't provide more context. So it's like discuss the positive and negative consequences of their decision, help them think about long-term impacts of stuff, work with them on slowing things down. So maybe when they're not with you, they know how to do it. And it's also important to def you can define your limits. All right. Like you can clearly state what you can and cannot support. Right. It doesn't mean I love you any less, but it's like this decision. I'm going to be consistent with the enforcement of like, I'm not doing that, right? The same way it's something as simple as like, no, this is the rule. The rule is like, don't smoke in this house. This is a consistent rule. you know, and if we're in your house, in your apartment, I'm not going to tell you what to do in your apartment, but in my house, this is a firm decision, right? Like this is what is happening. Living arrangements. My husband and I, we've been together 14 years, but it was understood that like, even when we were engaged, when we visited my parents' house and I was like, I'm sleeping at my, like, it would be like, oh, where are you guys going to sleep? And I'm like, oh, we're going to get a hotel. Understood. Because it's understood that like unmarried people do not sleep in the same room in my parents' house. That has always been a clear limit. Do I go back and forth like, mom, we're engaged? Nope. I let you know, like, we're staying at a hotel. We'll be here for breakfast at 10. Because my mom has always been very, my parent, my mom
Very
and dad have always been
clear.
clear, like, oh, it's a no. I don't care if y'all engaged. I don't care. You know, this is a limit in my household. And I'm not going to go back and forth with you guys about, cause it was been, it's understand, it's
Right,
understandable.
understood.
And also one of the things I think can be really helpful is like, I think we don't realize we should. Children's, especially teenagers, their processing speed is so much slower than ours. It's so much slower than ours. So I think we need to work on like being patient and giving space when it comes to, we need to allow them time that they may need to make decisions. Like, because I talked to my mom about this with my little brother, because my little brother is 20 and my mom moves so fast. She's also used to raising girls. And I can wholeheartedly say the way we think about things and the way my brother think about things are very different. So like, she's also coming in this wrong because she's like, you guys would have never done that. And I'm like, there's a lot of things you wouldn't do that Jason has done. So many things. So many things. Like, he thinks about stuff totally different. But he's also in a different generation. Just the fact that he's a boy, but he's also in a different generation. So like, he's had different experiences. And sometimes she's expecting us from him. And she's like, you know, expecting his processes to be the same as ours when we're that age. And it's not. Like, he needs more time.
Yeah.
So like, we have to understand that they need time to think. And it's very hard to think with both of your parents staring at you. So
right.
I think sometimes it's like, all right, well, you know, if you want to, we'll take a step back and, you know, just think about what we said and we'll come back to this. But like, I can wholeheartedly state that like, I can't think straight when y'all are both staring at me. Like, what the heck?
Right. And we need space.
I don't know.
Everybody needs space sometimes, right?
But I think
especially a 20-year-old young man, they need space.
I was talking to my mom the other day and I was like, mom, I need a minute. I'm going to call you back. I love you. Bye. Like, cause I don't, this is a lot. I'm over here trying to make food for your grandkids. You're asking me about something that I honestly forgot. Okay. Like, I'm still a child, you know, I'm your child, but I'm not a child. And, you know, it's still like, even with the respectful relationship with my parents, there are sometimes when I feel intimidated, cause like some stuff I do still like, that was the wrong thing to do.
Yeah. We're
And
all
I'm
working
grown.
Progress. We're working progress. And you have such amazing training. So you're so far ahead of most of us, which is amazing. I want to make sure that we have time for people to ask questions or comment if they want to. So if you are on your phone, you can hit *6 to come off of mute. Or if you're on your computer, click the mute button to ask Dr. Martin a question if you have any. Any questions? Comments, feel free. There's a question in the chat. It says, what do you do when you keep trying to enforce boundaries and they're not being respected?
Well, and I can't see the chat, so please do a follow-up. So boundaries control your behavior. Rules control someone else's. So are you saying that you're doing rules and they're not respected, or you're having boundaries that aren't being respected? Because if the only person who can violate your boundaries is you. So like, if there's something like,
my guess is it's rules, and I'll see if she puts a note in here, but my guess is it's rules.
It's a rule.
Like house rules probably.
Yeah. So I would state that there's always consequences. I would state like they're going to have consequences for that. Right. And I think the most frustrating thing is like, they're going to, I know this sounds, I remember having a patient and it's just like they were consistently, their children were consistently like waiting to the last minute to tell them that they had assignments. And she was telling me that like, oh, you know, and now it always, I'm late for work because I stayed up all night working on these assignments. And they're always, I'm always telling her to give me a heads up. And she never does when stuff that she needs help with. And she's like, she just never listens. And I'm like, yeah. So I'm going to tell you something that's totally difficult. I wouldn't listen to you either, because I, as a child, I'm not experiencing any discomfort in this scenario. Like, I'm not experiencing any consequences. I know that you're going to help me every single time. I know that like, no matter what, like there's the consequences. You may say, tell me you're not going to help me, but you always end up helping me. So there are no legit consequences for it. Right. So I think one of the biggest things is being consistent with the consequences, as well as being okay with like, all right, you know, this is something that was violated one time. This was the consequences. Five times, it's going to be a bigger consequence. And then it's also going to impact other things, right? Because I tell my children, my most important job is to keep you healthy and safe, right? And if you can't listen to me in the house, then I'm also going to have concern about us, you know, doing stuff outside the house because you're not listening, right? And if you can't listen here, then I have to worry about you being safe outside the house, right? So I would, is it possible to get more specific so I can provide you with like escalation of possible consequences with like what they're not
Can you
listening
add
about?
more specificity if you can?
Yeah.
Come off of mute if you're comfortable. But she did say rules. We'll wait and see if she's going to come back. I think, you know, I can speak on myself with my eldest. It was, you know, we already talked about the weed, but he would go out all times of day, night, sometimes stay out all night. Just stay out all night. I had no idea where he was and was too afraid. We didn't have 988 back
Yeah.
then. Because 988 is a
Mental
massively,
health, yeah.
yeah, it's in anything and it's manned and all that. But we would be terrified to call 911 because we didn't want anybody approaching him wherever he was. So it could be days, it could be a week. I have no idea. And this is a high school kid.
Yeah.
So, and then when he would finally come back, it's like, oh, thank God he's okay, you know, literally. And then the consequences probably often way out. Matched the situation, like way too much punishment for where we were, and then lack of conversation. So, but there was no real respect of the rules at that time.
And I think so, like, I think it's difficult anyway, but I don't have teens, but I working with people through therapy and even with my mom, some, and this may not be your rules, but some of my mom's rules were unreasonable. I'll
Right.
be honest with you.
I
And
think that's right.
I would be like, man, I would, mom, these rules are like so stringent and there's no room for error that they're going
Right.
to be broken.
That's right.
And we're not provide, and even like as children get older, like we're supposed to be fostering autonomy. And yes, you have rules in your house, but there was like, I know this seems like people are like, well, this is too much. Like I shouldn't have to do all this. And like you could do whatever you want. It's just understanding that like if the rules are too stringent, they're likely going to be broken. Or if you're being too strict with like if you're providing consequences instead of like, you know, if you're providing really punitive, punishments, it's going to impact the relationship of your
That's
children. It's
right.
like you could do whatever you want, just know that they have consequences as well.
That's
But like
right.
I would just be like, all right, so is it, have you ever talked to, you know, my brother, like have you ever talked to him about like why he's staying out so late or like what it is? And like say it's like he's hanging out with his girlfriend and he knows she don't like, well, this isn't the case with my brother because luckily everybody likes his girlfriend. But like if there's a scenario where like, oh, you know, I'm hanging out with so and so, and I know you don't like so and so. So, like, it's either I get to spend time with my friend that you say you don't like outside the house, or I come home and I don't get to hang out with anybody. And it's just like, all right, well, you know, I guess I feel more comfortable with them being in the house. So, like, okay, you know, one, sharing with your children that you don't like their friends, like, that's tough. But two, it's just like, well,
That
at
is
least they're
tough,
playing.
and that
That's
happened in my
tough, you know?
case.
And a lot of parents do that. Like, you know, I don't like her. It's like,
I did that. I did that with
yeah.
all the new friends.
Yeah. So
In
it's
high
just like,
school.
okay, well, if you want to, you're hanging out at the house later, you're breaking curfew because you want to spend time with your friend. How about like curfew outside the house is 10, but if you guys want to come to the house and stay up till midnight, you guys can come in the house and you can still hang out. Like you can still have the space to do that. Right. Like I always want to get to like, well, what's contributing to you breaking this rule consistently? And they could just be like, it's unreasonable. It's an unreasonable rule. Like they told me my bedtime is 9 o'clock. I'm 16. You know, and it's not always that insane. But sometimes you need a third party to just be like objectively, like, oh, she's saying that I can't use any social media. And it's like, okay, well, do I think that's a reasonable rule at like 17? No, but I'm not your parent. So like maybe we can sit here and have a conversation with your parent about like, why do you want to use social media? What do you use it for? Maybe they will feel more comfortable if they allowed you to have social media, but you have access to like a one of those websites that kind of just like let you know if there's anything dangerous happening on the phone. Like, I know a lot of parents are just like, I don't want to have any kind of compromise and stuff like that. And it's like, it's fine if you don't want to have any kind of compromise. It's not fine. You can be comfortable with not having compromise. And I want you to also be comfortable with the fact that that's going to negatively impact your relationship with your child. So in choosing one thing, you're also choosing another, right? So just be aware of that. And just be like, I'm okay. I'm okay with being stringent in my rules, not listening to my child, and as a result, having a less of a relationship with them. All right. But you have to understand that that comes with it, right? So especially as children get older, why wouldn't you revisit rules? Like when kids get older, you be like, okay, your bedtime could be 9 or 10 or whatever. Why not revisit that with them? Think of, and have conversations so you can also learn like how reasonable your children are. And they just like, listen, mom, I'm not asking for the world. I really just want like 30 more minutes. Or like, okay, I know that you keep saying, you know, you said that you're not going to buy another thing because it's too expensive. But what if I save 50% of it, the money? Like, would you be willing to like, I don't know, help me get this expensive phone if I come up with half the money for my job? Yes. Or if the answer's still no. Because if you can come up 50%, you can come up with 100%. You need to use your patience. And you know what? Pay for that yourself. I'm not paying for another phone. You done lost them 5 times, you know, or whatever like that. But like even having conversations like that really provides your children with an opportunity to, one, you can learn more about your children because you can't understand their thought process. You can't understand their decision-making. You can't be more comfortable with them not being around you if you don't know them. And I think a lot of parents honestly don't know their children.
That's it.
And it's hard to know them when, honestly, you're working, you're doing everything to keep food on the table. They still don't wash the dishes when you ask them to. Like, I totally get it's hard, but you're going to be more uncomfortable with your children and their decision-making away from you if you don't have conversation with them enough to know that, like, oh, that's not my child. I talk to them all the time and they would never do that. Or they know what's safe and unsafe. If you don't know your children, you don't know their thought process, you're never going to be comfortable with them. That's like having independence because you don't know them. Like my mom, I'm sure at this point, my mom can wholeheartedly say like, nah, she's not going to do that. Like, good luck.
So well.
Good luck talking to Raquel like that because I pray for you. If you thought she was going to get away with talking to my child like that, I don't even have to say anything because I know my child will say something. But that's because I talk to my mom all the time. That's because we have conversations and my mom is very much a person at this point who like, I don't have to agree with you to support you. And I also have to tell you 50 times that I don't support you or that I don't agree with this decision because I can tell you one time that I don't agree with this. You didn't forget. And then I could be like, I don't agree with this decision. However, let me know what support you need. My disagreement is on the record. I don't have to keep saying it.
That's right.
I do not have to keep saying it. I know when you disagree with something. My mom, when I reared my children, there are certain things she was just like, this is extra. All right. Show me how to do it. Like this is a bit much, but like
she sounds amazing.
Yeah, but I will say also, I grew up with my mom saying she's not one of my little friends. She is one of my little friends now. But like part of that was me being more comfortable with, I had to be open to share with my mom when she hurt my feelings. Like just being like, that hurt my feelings. And she would just be like, oh my God, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings. I was just talking how I was talked to. And I was like, yeah, I think it's crazy that you were talked to like that. And that hurt my feelings. Please stop. Wow. You know, like and being able to do that. So it's not even all on the parents. You know, you have to create an environment that children feel comfortable speaking, but the children also have to speak. Like it's not all on you, right? Like if I didn't tell my mom she hurt my feelings, if I didn't think our relationship was strong enough to handle conflict, because the issue isn't conflict, it's poor conflict resolution. If I didn't tell her that, she would have still kept doing it. So it's also on me. So yes, you provide the opportunity, but they have to, I always tell children, you have to provide your parents with an opportunity to like get it right and get it wrong.
That's
right. You can't say that they're never going to understand. Well, I'm like, your parent is sitting here telling you that they want to listen, that they're here to understand, and you're not going to give them the chance. You have to, the same way that you gave them the opportunity to get it wrong, you have to give them the opportunity to get it right too.
Absolutely.
And it's the same, it goes both ways. Like, okay, he broke this rule last time, he broke my trust. Okay. But we need to come up with tangible ways for them to build that trust, right?
Absolutely.
Like they broke the curfew. Okay. They got to build my trust. All right. So tell me what he has to do to build a trust though, right? Because it's a very abstract concept. Well, he has to come home at 9 p.m. for a week or for 2 weeks. And then I'll know that he listened. Great. Well, let's count down the 14 days. And then you have to provide him with another opportunity to get it right or get it wrong. Like you saying something as abstract as like, my trust is broken. They got to rebuild it. Okay. Well, give us a list of what they need to rebuild it.
Right. And
because
let
it's
it be
not fair
reasonable. And let it be
and
reasonable.
reasonable
Has to
and
be
reasonable.
reasonable. Can't be on punishment for 2 months with no phone.
It can't be on
So
punishment for 2 months because it's like you have to give them a goalpost. It has to be a tangible
absolutely.
goalpost because how are they going to meet something that you, oh, well, they broke my trust.
It
Understood. And I'm
has to
not saying
be,
anything about that.
yeah.
It has to
So
be a goal.
quickly, I just want to share, a woman has had her hand up for a minute. So
Oh,
if you want
sorry.
to come off of mute and ask a question, this will be our last question, then we'll close it out because I want to be respectful of people's time. So, Dee, do you want to come off of mute? Do you still have a question or a
Yes, I
comment?
have a, yeah, I do.
Good
So
morning.
it makes complete sense to me. Good morning.
Good morning.
What you're saying, sorry, I'm in my car. What you're saying to me about allowing your kids to speak up and voice their concerns, 100% makes sense. But it also made me think of something, a challenge that many employers and supervisors are having now are just this new generation of adults who think that everything is negotiable. You know, when we talk about those boundaries and rules, and I'm not going to say my concern, but I'm just wondering, these children that we're giving the tools to negotiate, because that's basically what we're allowing them to do, to negotiate. When do they learn the boundaries when not everything is negotiable, even if your request is reasonable? So, you know, maybe you can negotiate in this space, but not in another. But just hearing that just made me think of a webinar that I was in with some employers and supervisors, and that is becoming like an increased, you know, problem of what they're considering non-compliance. I mean, that's basically what that is. So what is your take on that?
I always I feel as though there are limits, and there are things that are negotiable, but then I would be very clear about what they are and what they aren't. Like for the example with my parents, it's understood that like no matter what, my rule is that unmarried people do not sleep in the same room. It's not negotiable. And honestly, it would be disrespectful to try to negotiate it anyway because my parents have always been very clear about like I don't care. You guys could be together. You guys could be 40 years together and you're still not married. You're not sleeping in the same bed in my home, right? But I also state that it starts with being clear about that. I do this with my students all the time because I'm teaching the new generation, right? So like if everyone gets a question wrong on the quiz, that's on me. So like I give them the points for the quiz. I let them know what my policies are ahead of time. And like for late policies, I give them 2 weeks to be late. Someone's late 3 weeks, it's a firm no, right? Because the negotiation is like you have up to 14 days to be late for something. Day 15 is going to be a no because I provided you with that opportunity. I think be clear with your children as well as like people need to be clear with other individuals. Like here are things where we have you have the opportunity to, you know, you have up to 7 days to complete something. You can complete something on day one, three, five, or seven. Here's the consequence if you do it on day eight. Right. I think one of the issues is, yeah, they do think everything is negotiable. And I will state that like some people have been able to craft jobs and opportunities where everything is negotiable for them. And I've also shared that like with this new generation, every place isn't going to be for you. Right. Like dealing with teens who are just like, oh, they're too stringent and this is an issue and I'm always getting in trouble. Well, it sounds like that's not the place for you. Right. Because if this is something that you can't adhere to, if these are their policies and this doesn't work with you, the issue is not them. It's you being in that space. And also just being very clear about that. Right. So it's just like, oh, well, I struggle with this. And this is something where it's like being a pilot. You can't land the plane appropriately 50% of the time. You have to land the plane safely 100% of the time. Right. And I say that because I've given that example to my students. Like, yeah. It's not negotiable how many passengers I'm going to be able to land appropriately. It's always going to be 100%. Bottom line, some things are just not going to be negotiable. Is that upsetting to you? Yes. Is it still, does it change the rule? No. Right? And if that doesn't work for you, then you need to be honest about yourself about this is going to be a place that you're able to work. Right? Certain things are negotiable, certain things aren't. And that's not me violating your boundaries. That's me adhering to the rules and the scenario that we're in because everything is not going to be negotiable. So yes, the same way you tell your I let my children know I always give them explanations. But My job is to keep you healthy and safe. So if I'm telling you to go immediately, I could ask you questions when we get into the store. My son has this habit of asking questions in the parking lot. And I said, what's the rule? Ask questions when we get in the store. Don't ask me questions in the parking lot while I'm trying to keep you safe. Right? Like, I always want you to ask me things, but if I'm saying do it now, I'm not here for it. Like, ask me questions when we get on the curb. Why are we in the middle of the street and you asking me, how is the sky blue? What's happening? You know, like, it doesn't make any sense. So when you're talking to your children and you're providing them the opportunity to negotiate, also you're letting them know that everybody has standards. Everybody has expectations. You can't expect me from everyone. Like, I'm your parent. I am going to listen a million times. Mm-hmm. I talked to them about this in school. My son had to realize that everybody who raises their hand isn't going to get called on in school. He came from having home childcare with his grandparents where he always got a turn. At school, he doesn't get a turn. Different environments constitute different things, right? Mm-hmm. So let them know that. Right. And also let them know that there are natural consequences for some things. I had a colleague who, she tells her child that she doesn't have to say hi if she doesn't want to say hi, right? And the friend who is an older friend is just like, oh, I think that's rude. And she's like, yeah. But I also want her to have the natural consequence to understand that, like, when you don't say hi to people, they don't want to engage with you. Mm-hmm. So, like, you can decide not to say hi to that person. You can also understand why that person maybe didn't want to invite you to their birthday party, because these are reciprocal behaviors. So certain things will have natural consequences. So one, let the children know that, like, everyone has their own preferences. So you can't expect the same thing from different environments, the same way that they know that, like, school, everyone doesn't get a turn versus home. I'll always get a turn because I only have to share it one person. Two, let them know that everyone is different. We're not robots. So the same way you want me to respect you, you got to respect them. And three, realize that if every time it's the issue is the environment, then you're the issue, and maybe you need to craft your own environment, right? This is why a lot of people, I feel like a lot of Black people and Black women are the biggest groups of entrepreneurs. And I don't think it's because we decided, like, oh, instead of working a 40-hour work week, we're going to work 140 hours, because that's what entrepreneurship is. Exactly. I think it's because we got so sick of trying to contort ourselves into an environment that wasn't meant to support us that we created our own. So also let them know there are going to be consequences to their actions. And you can't expect it from everyone. Like, everyone, I cuddle my children every single time there's an issue. You know, their dad don't do that. And you know, parents act differently. So, like, it's the same thing. So when you're talking to these employees, just be like, yeah, I want to be clear, because I don't want you guys to say that we're not respecting boundaries, but there are certain things that have to be done on time. These are the scenarios where the things are malleable and we can have conversations. These are the scenarios where they are not. If you cannot handle the scenarios where there are not, this is not going to be the place for you. Because although there's a list of things that you can converse about, this is not that. It's still work.
Yeah, absolutely. It's still work. Absolutely. And so I love all three things that you just said. And we are out of time. We could talk for another hour. But I want to just say thank you, thank you, thank you for being here, Dr. Martin.
Thank you. It's
such an honor to have you. I love you. I love all the work you're doing. And I look forward to doing more together.
Yes.
As we get into June, which is just next week, I want to turn it over to Dr. Vicki Johnson, who's going to close us out with a prayer this morning. And safe travels heading back home, Dr. Martin.
Thank you.
Thank you again. And Dr. Vicki,
I'll flip it over.
Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Raquel. Oh my gosh. I just need you in my pocket. This has just been incredible. Thank you for just pouring so unselfishly. This is powerful. And once again, Kelly, thank you for this vision and this safe space. So I'll close this out with prayer. God, we thank you for this beautiful day that you have given to us. Thank you for Dr. Raquel Martin and her life, her commitment, her passion for helping us to be not only better parents, but better people, better children. We thank you for your wisdom that flowed so effortlessly this morning. Bless us now as we go further into this day, into this weekend. Keep us safe and bring us back together next week so that we can continue to grow in our relationships with you, with ourselves, and with our children. And we give you glory for these things. Bless Dr. Raquel. Continue to make her name great all around the world. She's such a jewel. And we just thank you for her pouring today. We give you glory for all of these things. Bless Kelly, the Sunrise Project team, and the work of our hands, that we continue to make a difference and have impact wherever we go. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Thank you, Dr. Raquel. This is just so amazing. So powerful.
Amen. And thank you, Dr. Vicky, big sister. I love you so much as well. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you, Dr. Raquel Martin. Just grateful for you this morning. And I look forward to doing so much more together. Have an amazing day. Yeah, I'm excited. Have an amazing day, everyone. Have a safe and positive and productive and passionate and purposeful weekend. Happy Memorial Day. And thank you again. Have an amazing day.
Thank you.